morning to everybody. We've already had a really good time this morning, not only reflecting on the works of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., but just hanging out together, seeing each other, greeting each other, people we don't see quite often. We come together today, and I think it's a joyful occasion. And as I get ready to introduce the speaker, let me just follow my script here. But again, thank you so much for being here this morning. And Brother James, dear James, I saw you having a up and down.
It's 6'5", you're not, you can't have it.
Okay, so our speaker today is Mr. Reggie Thomas. Reggie Thomas, a native of Tree County and an experienced operations management and leadership development professional, has been selected as the featured speaker for our observance of the night of Martin Luther King Day. Thomas has worked extensively on projects that promote the education of African American history, emphasizing the importance of understanding the struggles, achievements, and leadership that have shaped this nation. His address is expected to provide, hold on, this is not George. I need help. Stephen, would you mind coming over here with this introduction? You know more about this guy than I do. Come on.
Well, thanks, Coach. I appreciate it. This is where you want to hear, not there. Good. Well, for those of you who don't know me, my name is Steve Sanders. I graduated from Tree County way back in 1987 with Reggie Thomas, Stan.
Oh, please, yeah. Hey, rise up.
It's great to see you all. A couple weeks ago, when I found out that Reggie was going to be giving the address today, I immediately said, I got to go. I live in Atlanta now. I've been there for about 20 years. But when I think Coach sent out something, was it on Facebook maybe? And I said, I got to go. I talked it over with the wife and took the kids out of school and said, we're going to go up and give Reggie a little support. And then last night, Coach Radford calls me and asked me if I wanted to introduce Reggie today. And I said, sure, I'd love to. It's not many times when a guy gets to roast one of his best friends in public. But actually, you don't have to be on this way. It's actually an honor to introduce Reggie, because like a lot of guys, I guess, who are friends for a long time, you don't really ever take the opportunity to express how much somebody really truly means to you. But now's my chance. So. But when Coach called me last night, I said, yeah, I'd love to. I was a little nervous too. I don't do a lot of public speaking these days. And it reminded me of a joke that Jerry Seinfeld used to tell in his act about public speaking. He said that for most people, public speaking is their number one fear, and death is number two. Two is death. So that means if you're going to a funeral, you're better off in the casket than giving the eulogy.
So, that's all right.
But seriously, it is a real honor to introduce Reggie today. He is one of my oldest and dearest friends. We first became pals as kids. We were playing sports together. I think our first team together was on the Pirates in Pee Wee Baseball a long time ago. I think, if I recall, I played first base that year, and Reggie played center field. He was fast, and he caught everything, and I mean everything that came his way. And he would run, and he would catch pop flies underhanded, just like Willie Mays used to do. And he had style, you know, he wouldn't just catch the ball, he had flair. But as Reggie reminded me last night, I'd forgotten, but actually the best player on our team was Ginger Wallace, if any of you know her. Ginger was terrific, and I still recall, must have been 7 or 8 years old, but she actually turned an unassisted triple play that year. In Pee Wee baseball. But anyway, growing up, Reggie and I played a lot of football together in middle school and high school. Early on, I was a quarterback, and Reggie was a tight end. And we didn't complete many passes in those days. It wasn't a passing time. But I do remember a freshman year game where one of the few passes we ever completed. It was a roll. It was a fake to Kenneth Wharton. He was going to the right and faked to him, bootleg, roll out to the left, and Reggie, I hit him with a perfect pass. Must have gone for 40 yards downfield. And he caught it. He got tackled. He didn't score a touchdown, but he came back to the huddle, you know, jumping up and down, whooping, hollering, you know, smile ear to ear, patting me on the back, and just like we just won the Super Bowl. From that time on, Reggie was my guy. I was never, you know, much of an athlete, but our friendship was forged, you know, playing sports together. But he was more than just an athlete. He was exceptional on the speech and debate team, and our senior year in high school, he joined the drama club. And when we did the Wizard of Oz that year, he played the mayor of Munchkin City. In our group of friends, there were a lot of free spirits, but Reggie was always the voice of reason, the adult in the room, the one with the common sense. Probably why our class voted him best all around and outstanding senior. Back when we were kids, I didn't know much about civil rights or social justice. I'm sure I knew who Martin Luther King Jr. was, but I probably never heard words like redlining or institutional racism or white privilege. At the time, I didn't have the words to explain or understand our history or the forces that shaped our country into what it is today. What I did have were teammates and friends. And sports has a unique way of bringing people together, regardless of their color or their backgrounds. Like a lot of kids, our earliest lessons about race and justice didn't come from books or history classes. They came on football fields and basketball courts, baseball diamonds, where players learn how to depend on each other and how to respect each other. I didn't really realize it back then, but the bonds that we shaped become integral to who you really are later, and who you become later in life. And to coaches like Coach Radford, Coach Wallace, Coach Wright, Mike Wright, there he is. You know, those were the leaders that really shaped us in so many ways. And I still thank you to this day for all the time that you spent turning us not into just athletes, but to young men. Even today, when we're all faced with challenges in life and we see things in our lives that that we know aren't right. Sometimes when we're faced with situations that they're confusing, sometimes we'll see a story on the news, especially if it involves race in some way. Sometimes I'll think to myself, you know, what would Reggie think about this? What would he say? He was always a voice of common sense and wisdom, I guess you could say, as wise as an 18 or 19-year-old kid can be. But nowadays, when something happens terrible in the news, something that makes you stop and turn your head and just shake your head in disbelief, still, these days, I'll think to myself, I wonder what Reggie thinks about that when he sees that. I wonder what Ginger Wallace thinks about it. I wonder what Coach Radford or Coach Wallace thinks about it. And it's not just big events that make you question. It's in everyday decisions that affect other people. Where you stop, you learn to stop and think not only what things are from your own perspective, but also how does somebody else look at that? You know, looking at the world through someone else's eyes, you know, trying to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes. Like a lot of friends from school, life took Reggie and I in different directions. And he's been up around Lexington for a long time, and I've been down in Atlanta more than 20 years. We don't see each other much anymore. But I always wished that we could have lived closer to each other so we could hang out and go see a game, watch our kids grow up. Reggie is one of those rare people that everybody likes. Somebody who brings other people together without even trying, really. People trust him, and they listen to him, they respect him. I'm not sure he really knows how much his friendship has meant to me over the years, but I do know this. The man you're about to hear from has been quietly doing the work of building bridges his whole life. And it's an honor for me to introduce my friend, Reggie Thomas.
First of all, Stevie, thank you so much. Appreciate you helping doing that introduction. And I know it means a lot to Reggie because you said a lot of things that made me reflect on how I feel about Reggie. And but I do think that we would be remiss if we did not introduce the person who made Reggie Thomas possible. And if you would you mind standing up, Miss Doris? This is Reggie's mom. His sister Denise. Miss Doris Morgan. And his friend Audra. And the class of 87, thank you so much for showing up today. We appreciate you. Again, we're talking about the same thing. Just loving one another, doing things together, and just letting God know that we hear what He said. When He said, love one another. Stephen, thank you, and I have a safe trip back to Atlanta. Appreciate you. Okay. And without further ado, at this time, we'll hear from Mr. Reggie Thomas. Time out.
Reggie was a great athlete.
Reggie ran track for me at 6'3", 6'2", 6'3", 250 pounds. He ran the 200-meter dash and ran a low 23. So he was a great athlete back in those days. Went on to Georgetown, played football at Georgetown, and they won a national championship while he was playing football at Georgetown. He's done several things as far as reenactment, civil rights reenactment. I don't know how much he's going to tell you about that, but little old guy coming from down in Free State and going out doing great things, winning championships, and just showing love throughout everywhere he goes. We're so proud of you, Reggie. It's your turn now.
Well, you never know what's going to happen when you wake up in the morning. You never know who might be able to do your eulogy that day in the future. So maybe I can plan on that. So have people can do that for me. So I do appreciate Genesis Express, President Acree, and everyone here for inviting me to come speak. Big G had reached out to me and said he kind of wanted to do something around the 250 year of American history and how it related to Trigg County. He said you only got 4 hours, so it'd be kind of hard to get pinned down in 4 hours. I said we need to narrow it down a little bit, but I was coming down the roads here. Kenneth Warden, Oski, as we called him, said, "I'm here to hear you speak, but you need to hurry this thing up." So we won't be speaking. I won't be speaking for 4 hours. So. But as we kind of narrowed it down, I kind of thought about what the different things we could talk about. And I want to talk about the thing that's probably most special to me when it comes to African-American history, and that's blacks in the military. And that's how it formed this nation for all the veterans. If you're a veteran in the room, actually raise your hand. So African-Americans have been there from the very beginning. So one of the big projects that I worked on is at Camp Nelson. But Camp Nelson sits right outside of Nicholsville, Kentucky, which is right outside of Lexington. Camp Nelson was the third largest recruiting station for African Americans during the Civil War. They still had the officer's house, was still intact. There's also a national cemetery there now. And Jessamine County wanted to buy a cannon, have people dress up in period, and then also have all the students come in to educate them about African Americans' role during the Civil War. And the thing in the comment that struck me the most was the number of times people said, "I didn't know black people fought in the Civil War," and it was all ages and all races. And so it was very important that we know we educate. Education is the key to everything. And it was very important that we do that. I got a lot of satisfaction. A lot of times we do this during the school day, but on the weekends when we have events, when people come back, you know, with their kids or whatever, how the parents thank us for, you know, enlightening their kids on everything and getting them excited about history. So sometimes in time, it doesn't take very big moments in your life to have that spark. So that one happened to me about 40 years ago, and I can remember as clear as it happened that day. So we're down in Opryland, the family. That's for you younger people. That's when it was still an amusement park, not a shopping mall. So we were down there, and it was the end of the day. It was me, my dad, Pete Thomas Jr., my mother, Doris Thomas, and my baby sister, Dr. Denise Hardy. Hardy, I love to say that. So proud of her. So it's at the end of the day, and Dad tells me and my sister to pick out something for a souvenir. I think Denise picked out some type of t-shirt or whatever, I can't remember. But I'm looking around, and on this table, I see this hat. And I called Dad over and said, "Dad, I want this hat." Kind of looked like a cool hat. And I pointed the hat to my dad, and the hat had a Confederate flag on it. And I said, "Dad, I want this hat." And my dad looked at me, and he said these words. He says, "I'm not going to buy you that hat right now. That hat has to do with the Civil War. I want you to go home and read about it. And if you still want that hat, I will come back and buy you that hat." So we had not long bought some encyclopedias and been reading ever since. So it doesn't take much to sometimes spark young people, but it's very important that we try to educate the young people on our history where we don't forget, because a lot of things repeat themselves. A lot of people like to say, you know, this is the best, the worst time it's ever been. All this stuff has happened before. It just keeps repeating itself.
Yeah.
All right. So we kind of go through this. I kind of want to just highlight some of the big moments in American history. First time starting with the Revolutionary War and talk about some things there. There was a gentleman by the name of James Armistead who was a slave. So this is how important African Americans have been in American history, because for this country, we did a lot of things even during slavery. What he was, when General Lafitte came over from France to help the Americans, he was assigned to him. So he was like the first agent 007 in the United States history. He was a double agent. What he was doing, he was going into the British camp where Cornwallis was and learning all their plans, and he would bring them back to Lafayette. What he would also do, since the British trusted him so much, he would give them fake information about the Continental Army. So what it caused Cornwallis to do, he kept backing up into Yorktown until he was trapped. So this slave had convinced a British general to move all around and cause himself to get trapped. So the colonists trapped him in, the French and the Navy trapped him, so that's why they ended up having to surrender. After the war, he fought for his freedom. General Lafayette also worked very hard on that, and finally the British the Virginia legislation gave him his freedom. There were over 8,000 African Americans that fought in the Army and the Navy. The ironic thing, when all this started, blacks and whites fought together until some of the Southern colonies got really upset about it, and then it becomes desegregated. So in the very beginning, it took 175 years for us all to fight together again. In the War of 1812, there was a gentleman by the name of William Williams, who was also another escaped slave. So everyone knows the story about Francis Scott Key when he wrote the Star Spangled Banner. He was sitting out on a British ship watching Fort McHenry being bombed. And one of the soldiers in that fort was William Williams. I said he was still a slave at the time. They had promised him his freedom if he would stay and fight. Unfortunately, he was mortally wounded in the battle, so he never saw his freedom. But he was willing to die for his country, even enslaved. During that war, more blacks fought in the Navy because Navy life was really hard, more so than did in the Army. So once again, blacks were very participated all the way through, all the way from the beginning. This is our country as well. As you look at the Mexican-American War, blacks were heavily involved in that war, especially a lot more in support roles. You didn't see quite as many soldiers because the Mexican War was heavily pushed by Southern states because they wanted to create more slave states. So there wasn't a lot of Northern soldiers who were actually who fought in the Mexican War. But blacks were there to help participate and help support that to victory. And you can imagine how much territory the United States gained after the American-Mexican War. Moving on to the big one, the Civil War. So Kentucky, we're there at Camp Nelson. Kentucky provided the most blacks enlisted in Kentucky than any other state. 23,000 African Americans enlisted in the state of Kentucky. So they were very crucial. A lot of Turkanians who enlisted in the 8th Colored Heavy Artillery, which is in Paducah. Two of my fourth great grandfathers were there. So if you're ever wanting to look up doing family genealogy work, the 8th Colored Heavy Artillery out of Paducah, there's a lot of Turkana names in there. You may be able to search and find some family members. Over 200,000 blacks fought in the Civil War. It was key to Reconstruction started. So there started to be a lot of resistance at this point. A lot of these soldiers are like, you know, we're fought for our freedom. It's time for us to be equal. So this is really the start of what I would consider the Civil Rights Movement. There was a lot of pushback. You know, the KKK was formed. A lot of lynchings took place or whatever. But soldiers are starting to say, we want to be part of everything now. So a lot of them became more prominent in their communities. And then as kickback to that, that's when a lot of the Jim Crow laws kicked into effect. Because there's been a lot of resistance to African Americans moving forward in American history, even though they're fighting for their country. Things they did during that time, the struggles they went through, there was a lot of fighting within them to eventually get to where we wanted to get to one day. During the Spanish-American War, one of the funny stories here is the 9th and 10th Cavalry fought there as long as the 24th and the 25th. It actually wasn't Teddy Roosevelt that charged San Juan Hill. It was actually the 10th. Teddy Roosevelt and them charged Porter Hill, but the newspaper said that wasn't Spanish enough, so they gave them the credit for charging San Juan Hill when it was actually the 10th, which is part of the Buffalo Soldiers. So the Buffalo Soldiers came after the Civil War, so it was the Buffalo Soldiers who fought in the Spanish-American War. And there was just growing tension. Once again, blacks are coming back from all these wars, you know, demanding equality with all of this. Then we look at World War I. You have the Helm firefighters who fought. These people were highly respected over in France. So when the United States got over into France, the French kept asking the Americans, can you attach Americans to us? The Americans did not want to put American forces under the French. So what they did, they gave the African-American soldiers to work for the French. They were highly decorated, and the United States government kept telling the French, you cannot decorate these guys. You need not treat them equal. They're here fighting for you, we've detached them, but they're not to be treated equal, not to give them any type of awards. So once again, African Americans are fighting for their freedom, and their own country is trying to hold them back. Men like Jesse Baker, who fought it, and Charles Baker Jr. from Trick County, were people who in World War I. Now as I go through, I'm going to mention some Trick County names. Please don't be offended, because there are so many. I'd be here all day if we were trying to list them all. But all the veterans that came back from World War I were especially integral in making the NAACP grow. So in 1909, the NAACP had about 9,000 members. After all the soldiers got back, which was about 300,000, that membership jumped to 250,000. So, you know, once again, there were leaders in the community. They were a big part of the civil rights movement to try to get all these things started. Charles Hamilton was one of those. He was a mentor. He did a lot of legal funding and legal arguments for the NAACP. He was a mentor to Thurgood Marshall, as well as he put together the legal arguments for Brown versus Brown, and he was a World War I veteran. Now, the Red Summer of 1919, there was a lot of resistance. In Tulsa, Oklahoma, there was something they used to call the Black Wall Street. It was very wealthy and very successful. And a lot of the soldiers who had come back from World War I had helped build this community. It was very powerful. There was a lot of money there. They created a fake riot and gave a reason to try to come over and burn all that part of Tulsa down. It was a very strenuous time. Blacks were resisting. There's just all this against them, trying to keep them in their place, as they would say. So they came over and burned their communities. But there were tons of riots and around parts of the country. And this is where a lot of the lynchings occurred. So between 1880 and about 1930 is where a lot of your lynchings occurred. And the people they targeted the most were actually African-American veterans, because they figured if they could stop the veterans, then they could stop the whole movement, because those were now the leaders in the community. Moving on to World War II. So there was a double V for victory. So African-Americans had to fight against fascism in Europe and racism at home. So over a million African Americans served in World War II. You know, there's some of the more famous groups, of course, the Kentucky Airmen, the 761st Armor Group, which I was an armor when I was in the military, and then the Munford Marines, Point Marines. So they helped liberate Europe, but then they would come back home to a lot of racism, a lot of resistance. But now you've got a million of them. You know, the first war, there's 300,000. Now a million have come back who want to be treated a certain way, want to be equal. It is very difficult to tell a person you're not equal when they're fighting for the country. You really have no argument at that point. So that's where a lot of the civil rights movement and push came from all the veterans who were coming back. So we had some people from Trick County. Most of you know Mr. Norris Baker. Mr. Norris Baker, educator at Trick County. Mr. Baker was highly decorated. He fought in the Pacific in the war. Clyde Baker, He was in the Italy campaign. He earned the Purple Heart. Curtis Kerlin was actually at Pearl Harbor. Fortunately, he wasn't at Pearl Harbor at the bad time. He was in one of the ships. So when the Japanese had attacked Pearl Harbor, one thing they didn't know, a lot of the naval fleet was out in the ocean. So when they attacked it, they weren't there. He was lucky and happened not to be there at the time. But later on, he fought in the Pacific during the war. But his ship was out when they came in. Another one is Mr. Sherlin Cunningham, Sr. A lot of you know him. He worked with the Extension Agency a lot, working with the farmers around the community. I always love seeing Brother Cunningham, because when Brother Cunningham come out to talk to grandfather, that means I was going to get a break from working. They will talk forever, so I can get in the same tree and not have to do anything for a couple hours. It was never a quick checkup visit. It always took a couple hours, so I was happy. Man, you know, there's Brother Cunningham or whatever, so I'm sure I'd like to see him. So, but all of these people came back and were leaders in their community, so which was very important. So this was another push for civil rights. Baker Evers was a World War II veteran. Everyone knows him from Mississippi. He was a secretary for the NAACP in the Mississippi. Jackie Robinson, who integrated football. He was the first African-American to play professional baseball. Not professional baseball, but in the major leagues. Hosea Williams was responsible, another veteran, who was responsible for the March on Selma, and who did a lot of the marches and organized all of them for Martin Luther King during the civil rights. So it was double. It was a double victory, you know, like I said, to fight against fascism in Europe and then come home and then fight against racism in the United States. Kenneth, am I going fast enough? I'm going to hold you up. I know you got places to be. Put pressure on me. All right, so after World War II, a lot of veterans were really pushing for more opportunities. And one of the things they did was push, especially in the military. So in 1948, President Truman, 175 years ago from the point where blacks and whites used to fight together in integrated units, desegregated the military. So the military was one of those places where, you know, a lot of African Americans rose through the ranks. You know, I've got a colonel right here behind me. So it created a lot of opportunities. It was one of the first integrated national organizations. And once again, it's hard to tell people you are not equal when you're fighting and dying. During the Korean War, there were some other members of Trigg County. Mr. Charles Baker Jr., you will see a theme here. The Bakers have been very active in the military, you know, with Charles Baker Sr., to Jr., all the way to Laverne. A couple months ago, I was actually in Frankfort at the Kentucky History Museum, and I was walking around, and they had a display of Kentucky women in the military, and there was a display of Laverne, and I started praying and telling everybody in that museum, that was my neighbor growing up. So people all over the state know Laverne was my neighbor growing up, so it was a lot of fun. Other men, Sam Bridges Jr., Esper Crump Jr., and Prentice Vincent. And like I said, there's a whole lot of names I could mention. So, but there were a lot of African-Americans from Trigg County helped fight for the freedom of this country. In the Korean War, James Meredith was a veteran. He was the first person to integrate Ole Miss School. And you know, many other African-Americans who fought in the Korean War. And once again, you have another push here, once these veterans are coming back from fighting, to strengthen the civil rights movement and make it stronger. Because once again, I want to keep going with the theme. You cannot tell somebody they're not equal when they're fighting for their country. Because there's a lot of the people that don't fight for their country, but all these African-Americans did. The Vietnam War. So the Vietnam War was especially tough on black people. At that time in American history, blacks made up around 11% of the population, but African Americans were 30% of the people that died in Vietnam. So very disparate of the number of people that were dying. So a lot of people served there. A lot of people know Buckner Crump, who gave his life, you know, in Vietnam. A lot of records his. My own dad, he was a war hero. My dad had a couple Purple Hearts, a couple bronze medals, a Silver Star for bravery. Prentice Martin, Henry Russell Jr., Roy Radford, and I believe I saw, did I see Mr. Joe Rogers earlier?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So all these men also served and come back, you know, they demanded equal rights or whatever. So a lot of these things, you know, pushed the civil rights movement forward. So it's always been my belief, I'll say this to the ministers, that they're the three most important people: God, Jesus, and soldiers. Because everything we have is because of those three things, right? So they were pushing everything through history to get us to where we are today. And there were a lot of men who worked very hard with Martin Luther King for equal freedom, and they're still working on that today. So there's a lot of crazy things that you hear in the news. So history tends to repeat itself. And we need to always stay on top of everything and educate people. Not being educated makes you ignorant on things, which therefore then creates fear, right? So it's important that you stay educated, and especially educating the young people. You know, the military service, there were organizations that were started after the Vietnam War, the SNCC, you know, the Black Power movement, and a lot of anti-war protests made kind of people in general more active when it came to politics. You know, Martin Luther King kind of said it's a kind of contradiction. We have all these African Americans, you know, fighting around the world for America, but they do not experience the same freedoms at home. Military has another place where there's been a lot of progress. You know, people like Colin Powell, kind of in the modern day. So they continue. You know, as far as the rank goes, there's a lot of still disparities. You know, in the military, so we're still working our way forward through that. Martin Luther King's voice on black soldiers. He highlighted the hypocrisy of fighting for freedom abroad, but not at home. Called for economic injustice for veterans, all veterans, because you especially seen the way veterans were treated after they came back from Vietnam. Saw black service members moral witnesses to what could be in America. Kind of a call to action. Remember the legacy of the 250 years of black history in the military service. Honor MLK by striving for justice and policy in communities. Future freedom becomes a lived reality for all Americans. And Martin Luther King said, the arc bends toward justice only if we bend it. All right. So, like I said, black troops have played an integral part in this country, the founding of this country. So there seems to be a lot of things in school now that wants to try to cover up a lot of this history. But I think it's very important that we continue to teach this history, because it's American history. It's very difficult to leave parts of it out. It is what it is. And we need to continue educating everybody's role in American history, because things will repeat themselves. So I appreciate everyone having me here today. If anybody has any questions afterwards, I'm going to talk about history all day. So working on a lot of projects or whatever. So all right. Well, thanks everybody. I appreciate it. Colonel himself, so.
I'm not on the stage today.
I'd just like to thank you, Reggie, for traveling with your family and then imparting this knowledge of military and African-American history for us. And I know when I started in 73, the door was sort of cracked, but over time and through the movement, it gradually opened. And we were promoted based upon merit rather than handshakes and behind the door deals. So we have the greatest military in the world right now.
We do.
And I just thank God for allowing me an opportunity to go through ROTC at Murray State University. Me and my roommate George were at ROTC, and we used to compete for best in platoon and best in company. And he wins, so we were serious about what we're doing. And after that introduction to the military, I decided to stay on for 30 years. So I was truly blessed. But we thank you for taking us on that journey.
Appreciate the journey.
The beginning history of the military in America and bringing us right up to date. Appreciate your hospitality whenever you come to Lexington for the state tournament.
Oh, yeah. So
Greg is always with us. He always has a space in our room. We can share it with you. God bless you. And God bless your family.
Thank you
so much.
Appreciate it.
This is a token of appreciation
for you. Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. We have to. All right. Thank you very much. All right. Thank you.
Oh, God.